남자한테 연락해야 돼. 남자. 남긴 남자한테. 말해놓. 이게 단대 제라 뭐 남긴 남자한테. 이번 남긴 남자, 이번 남긴 미국, 남긴 반자. 어떻게 따지고 싶어서.
We're, as you all know, that we are focusing on the different Buddhist philosophical tenets or the thoughts of schools. And so among the four major Buddhist thoughts of schools, we're at the Great Exposition Schools, which is Vaivashika's one of the branch of Buddhist philosophical thought of Buddhist philosophy. And so we are on the chapter, it is on page 203, Assertion on the Path, that talks about the path and the object of observation and the object that abandoned by the path and so on. So what is meant by the path in the Buddhist in Buddhism? When we speak about path, normally when we are going somewhere or we intended to go somewhere, if you know the path or the method of going there, then it will be much more easier for us to get to one's destinations. Similarly, in the context of Dharma, when we speak about path, path is a method which enables one to take a journey to the destination of everlasting happiness. So this everlasting happiness can be done on the, will be able to reach that everlasting happiness, which is in other words, it is a destination. To reach that destination, we need to go through the process, in other words, travel and into the journey of the path to be able to get there. So that is in the context of Dharma, it is one kind of method or the skillful means for one to travel from one place to another place where you can achieve lasting happiness.
Never
So here, when we speak about the path or the spiritual path is not really exclusive to Buddhism. And spiritual path is can be found in all other religious traditions, major religious traditions. So what is a path? Path here really refers to the method that which enables one to, you know, reach to the destinations, one's spiritual realizations. In other words, the path is that one that really counteract sufferings and lead that the path will lead oneself to the state of everlasting happiness. That is what is meant by path. So path the practice of the path, as we mentioned earlier, it's not exclusive to Buddhism, but rather it is the practice of the path or the method to overcoming suffering could be found in other religious traditions as well, the non-Buddhist religious traditions, particularly of the ancient Indian non-Buddhist philosophical non-Buddhist traditions. So the reason why we are, why all those different religious traditions are emphasized on the path is to gain liberations. In other words, gain free from sufferings. That is why all those different religious traditions would seek path that leads oneself to the spiritual liberations. So in some non-Buddhist religious traditions, particularly of Indian ancient Indian non-Buddhist religious traditions, their path is to take a hardship upon one's own physical body, and torturing one's body, and you know, inflicting harm upon one's own body by oneself is one of the methods for achieving liberations. This is one kind of belief in one of the ancient Indian religious traditions, which is still, they still practice on that, you know, torturing one's own physical bodies and so forth. However, all of those spiritual religious, different religious tradition have this, you know, method or the path, and their cultivation of the path and practicing the path is to, you know, gain the liberations, which means cessation from sufferings, to gain everlasting happiness and so on. So when it comes to path in the Buddhist context, the path here really refers to the way of thinking. It is a way of, your way of thinking will take yourself to the closer to liberations. And it is through this process and development and enhancing the path, one will then eventually gain the state of liberations, which is everlasting happiness.
That
The practice, spiritual practice of the cultivation of spiritual path, such as compassion, love, tolerance, sense of connectedness, and so forth, are not an exclusive spiritual path, spiritual practice of Buddhism. This practice is shared by all major religious traditions. And so what is exclusive to Buddhism when speaking about the spiritual path in Buddhism is first to actually find the cause that leads to sufferings. And when we go through the analysis of the finding this cause that leads to it, leads to suffering, Buddhists normally identify the three root causes that leads to that leads individual to the state of suffering. Those are ignorance, attachment, and hostility, or the anger. Those are the three main causes that prevent individual to achieve happiness. And so then Buddhism emphasizes very strongly on the identification of those three causes and to understand how those negative thoughts and emotions such as anger and hatred and so forth are coming into being. What is the causes and condition behind generation of those ignorance, hatred, and anger, ignorance, hostility, and so forth. So therefore, it is through the identification of those negative thoughts and emotions, then the Buddhism emphasizes on finding antidotes to counteract that negative thoughts and emotions is what is all meant by path here. So what is unique about Buddhism, the teachings that you will find in Buddhism, is what causes happiness? What is the causes and condition that lies behind happiness? And what are the causes and condition which give rise to happiness, sufferings and so forth? So therefore, Buddhism emphasizes very strongly on identification of the causes and conditions, because you cannot simply just identifying that actual problem and try to overcome that problem will not work, because so long as you are unable to sever the causes and conditions of that particular problems, you will not be able to uproot the causes, the problems or unhappiness or sufferings. So therefore So therefore, the Buddhism speaks about the main causes and conditions that give rise to suffering is attachment, aversion, and the ignorance. Those are the three main causes that prevents individual to achieve happiness. Though we all desire for happiness, but we are unable to enjoy, we are unable to experience happiness because of the causes and conditions. Because we are unable to identify and we are not being able to recognize what is the causes and conditions behind one's suffering and what is the causes and conditions for actual lasting happiness and so forth. So then this, all those negative thoughts and emotions such as attachment, hostility, and so forth are given rise by ignorance. What is meant by ignorance here is ignorance pertaining to ultimate nature of reality, how things really are. It is only understanding and identifying and recognizing how things really are, one will be able to cut the roots of sufferings. One will be able to cut the roots of the causes and conditions of the sufferings. So then when it comes to the explanation of ultimate nature of reality, the actual mode of existence of all phenomena, then we find a different philosophical tenets. The different philosophical tenets comes into picture. In the different philosophical schools of the thoughts has a different interpretations, different presentations, identification of actual ultimate nature of reality. So then when it comes to the assertion on the path, then you say this section has three parts, and the great exposition school's assertion regarding the object of observations of the path, an object abandoned by the path, and the nature of the path. So then the object of observation of the path, when it comes to the object of observation of the path, the object of observation are the 16 attributes of the four truths, in other words, the four noble truths, impermanence and so forth. So out of the 16 attributes of the four noble truths, why the impermanence is, why this 16 attributes begins from impermanence? Because according to Buddhism, if you are unable to understand the nature of impermanence, you will not be able to engage in the practice, Dharma practice, sincerely. In order to become oneself a sincere practitioner, one need to understand
all things are impermanent, including oneself. There's no such things, including oneself, that exist for forever. So it is, when speaking about impermanence, there are, you know, two kinds of impermanence. One is the subtle level of impermanence and one is the gross level of impermanence. So impermanent phenomena, the gross level of impermanent phenomena that we all know, that we all realize, we all understand those gross level of impermanent phenomena. However, when it comes to the subtle level of impermanent, it is not easy for us to understand. It is not easy for us to ascertain. For instance, just take oneself as an example. From the birth up until now, the impermanent, the nature of impermanent is functioning within us, with us. In other words, it causes momentary change, one moment to another moment. But we are not noticing that. We are not understanding how the life changes, one moment to another moment. And that is, it is due to the lack of this understanding, we always prepare ourselves to live forever. So here, by understanding this impermanence, a crucial contribution to one's spiritual practice, because understanding the impermanence that will actually reinforce your practice of the cultivation of the path that leads to liberations. So here now, speaking about the Four Noble Truths, the teachings of the Four Noble Truths are all about how sentient beings are taken rebirth within the unenlightened existence uncontrollably, and then how the sentient beings can actually reverse this chain of, birth and death. So the first two truths, the truth of suffering and the truth of origin of sufferings, teaches how the beings are actually, revolved within the cyclic existence. And next two truths, the cessation and the path leading to cessation, will teach how the individual can actually reverse this order, reverse the chain of, life of death, cyclic existence. So the cause of cyclic existence or the cause of taking rebirth uncontrollably within the unenlightened existence are the karma and delusions. It is the delusion that enables individual to engage in the actions. Since the actions are motivated by delusions, and these actions will become what we call the non-virtuous actions or the negative actions, that enables individual to accumulate karma, which then give rise to its result in the state of annihilating existence. And so then here, how one can reverse this order, how one can really, you know, eliminate this cause of the suffering and the cause of taking rebirth within this annihilating existence is, again here, two cause and effect explanation that we could find is the path that is the cause. Path needs to be cultivated to overcome those negative thoughts and emotions. And having cultivated this path, as a result, one will be able to actualize what we call the cessation from sufferings. So therefore, it is through recognition of the impermanent nature, one will be able to counteract the grasping at permanent self or the permanent phenomena. Similarly, it is through understanding the selflessness of phenomena or selfness of a person, one will be able to counteract the grasping at self, which is the root cause of our sufferings. So therefore, the reason why we find the different philosophical tenets is to explain, according to the disciples' spiritual inclinations, they explain different way of explanation is given regarding the ultimate nature of reality, of actual mode of existence of phenomena, self and phenomena. So therefore, then it reads, it says, subtle selflessness and subtle, the subtle selflessness and the subtle selflessness of person are asserted to be a mutually exclusive. It is according to this particular philosophical tenets. So let's talk about here the impermanent, which is the gross level of impermanent. That is, we perceive such as the destroying of building and collapsing of buildings and, you know, destroying certain objects, the visible object. So those are what we call the gross level of impermanent that can be perceived through our ordinary sense consciousness, sense perception, in other words. However, when it comes to the subtle level of impermanent, it is not possible for us to really perceive at this point. It requires a sustained and prolonged contemplations to really to able to gain the realization of impermanence, in a subtle level of impermanence, such as we talked about earlier, the momentary change of oneself. Right from the birth up until now, we're going through unending change, but we are not realizing it. The momentary change has not been recognized by us at this point. We cannot perceive through our perception the momentary change. Similarly, the selflessness here, even more subtle, it's not easy to really to understand what is really meant by selflessness. In this particular philosophical tenets, when it goes through the explanation of selflessness here really refers to the permanent, solitary, and autonomous self. In other words, self that is permanent, autonomous, and so therefore, this is what this particular philosophical tenet says, the selflessness. But however, in other philosophical tenets, this selflessness is said to be the gross level of selflessness. So therefore, in order to understand impermanence of phenomena, one must understand what is meant by permanent, first of all. If these things are permanent, how it should be? What is the mode of existence of this particular phenomena? One must understand first, if this exists as a permanently, it should be existing that way. This is not so. So on and so forth. So in order to understand impermanent, one must understand what is meant by what is permanent first. Similarly, in order to understand selflessness, first of all, one needs to understand of the independent self. Because without knowing independent self, or without having a proper understanding of what is meant by independent, solitary, and single, independent self, one will not be able to understand the selflessness. So therefore, because in order to understand this impermanent, one need to negate impermanent. In order to understand selflessness, one need to negate the self. So therefore, you need to understand the object. We need to first of all understand, in order to understand what is to be negated. In other words, the object of negation need to be understood. So in order to understand the most effective method of understanding selflessness, one need to understand what is meant by dependent originations. If you understand the dependent originations, then you will understand selflessness. Without understanding dependent originations, you will not find as a method that enables one to understand selflessness. So you should begin to understand, to practice self and others, oneself and others, do not exist independently. They do not come into being from nowhere. All of those phenomena and self and others exist by depending upon other factors, depending upon other causes and conditions. There is no such things that exist by its own side. There's no such thing that exists without depending on other factors or without depending on causes and conditions. This is the initial step of moving forward for understanding the selflessness. So then not only the self as a dependently designated or dependently originated, but also the subjective mind, such as we talked about earlier, the attachment, hostility, and ignorance, too, are dependent on other factors. They do not come into being from nowhere. And then object of those subjects are two dependently designated, dependently originated, and dependently exist. For instance, by reflecting upon certain object, by engaging with certain object, we generate anger, and by reflecting upon other objects, we generate hatred, and by reflecting upon other certain object, that give rise to attachment and so forth. So your attachment does not come into from nowhere. It has some kind of factor that really makes the attachment, anger, and ignorance visible, or ignorance coming into existence. So how can we then really, prove the things that does not exist independently, does not exist by its own side, it does not exist intrinsically, it does not exist by virtue of its own side, in other words. Here, let's take an example of one object. When one come across with certain that particular object, you generate anger or attachment, and this particular object exists by its own side as an object of attachment, and by virtue of its own side as an object of attachment, then whoever sees it, whoever come across with this particular object, they should generate attachment, should have attachment to this particular object. However, that is not so. When some come across with this particular object, may generate attachment, and then other, when it comes, come across with this particular object, may generate hatred and anger and so forth. What that really entails here is there's no such thing that really exists, the object that is really exist by virtue of its own side. whether you look at this object as a, that's a desirable or undesirable, it is all dependent upon it is, you know, other factors. Its very existence of that particular object is dependent upon other factors. So then, negative emotions such as attachment and anger and so forth has its own causes and conditions. Its very existence is dependent upon other factors. So therefore, it is a dependent originations. So if, since there is a causes and condition for given causes and condition for those negative thoughts and emotions, such as attachment and anger, and there is a method for, you know, seizing, in a method for, you know, actually overcoming those causes and condition of negative thoughts and emotions. By identifying and understanding the nature of anger or hatred or negative thoughts and emotions, then one need to analyze and to look carefully for what is the causes and conditions that give rise to anger and hatred or negative thoughts and emotions. So once you're able to recognize the causes and conditions behind that, then one need to try one's best to actually overcome that negative thoughts and the causes and conditions of that negative thoughts and emotions. So it is through this kind of practice and meditation or contemplations, one will then be able to, you know, cultivate what we call the spiritual path that give rise to liberation or the achievement of lasting happiness. So then it's in the text it says, the subtle selflessness of person is asserted to be a person's emptiness of the being, a substantial existence in the sense of being self-sufficient. So it is again here based on Vaivashika's standpoint or the great exposition schools, the standpoint of great exposition schools. So now here what we are focusing here right now is to identifying the true self. Where is the self? Where is I? In other words, if we were to go through a critical analysis of finding the self within oneself, analyzing beginning from the crown of one's head all the way to the sole of one's feet, we will not be able to find the self that we normally assert or we normally believe that is a self. the conquered self, independent self. Normally, when we think about the self, we think about intrinsic self, as if something that can be pinpointed, as if we can touch and feel it. But if we take critical analysis, looking at oneself, where the self that I always think as the most important part of my life, where does it really exist? Is there any self that exists independently? Is there any self that exists intrinsically? If you go through a critical analysis, in the final analysis, you will find no such self. So here, if you look at yourself and try to find where the self is, if you accept my head is myself, if you accept that my, head is me or I or self, then there's no other reason not accepting your hand as yourself. There's no other reason could be found that your leg is not being yourself. If you accept all limbs are yourself, then you have to accept the innumerable self. Then that actually contradicts the conventional reality. In other words, it actually contradicts the reasonings. There's no such valid reasoning behind accepting yourself as a two person or three person, three people or four people, a four person and so forth. So if you really go through the critical analysis, you will definitely not find the self that we normally think that is myself. There is a self, the existence of the self. Here it's one thing that we need to understand, important to understand is that when we speak about the unfindability of the self, that doesn't mean that we are actually rejecting self, existence of the self. What we are not finding is we are not finding the true self, the actual existence of the self. That is what is lacking. When you go through the critical analysis, when you come to understand, there is no self that intrinsically real. There is no self that exists by its own side, within yourself. Or oneness of oneself, or apart from oneself, then you are actually stepping forward to understanding what is meant by selflessness, or the selflessness, characterlessness of self. So therefore it is in this particular philosophical tenets, when it comes to the selfness of a person, it's the selfness of a person here refers to the self not being independent, self not being permanent, not being one entity or single, are not being independent. Independent self is completely rejected in this particular philosophical tenets. So when we speak about the selflessness of person, we're speaking about lack of independent self. We're speaking about devoid of independent self. That is what we mean by the selflessness here. So in the four, the major Buddhist philosophical tenets, that's Buddhist schools of thoughts, there are differences in accepting the selflessness, or the different interpretations of establishing the selflessness. So it is based on having a different interpretation and different explanation of selflessness, then four different kinds of Buddhist schools of thoughts coming into picture. So one of the subdivision of the Vaivashika or the Great Exposition School accepts the self independent self that, you know, not dependent upon the psychophysical aggregates. There's one subdivision of the Vaivashika or the Great Exposition Schools except there's a the sense of being a self-sufficient self. So it says in clearly, states in the text, it says the subtle selflessness of person is asserted to be a person's emptiness of being substantially existence in the sense of being self-sufficient. From among the 18 sub-schools of the Great Exposition Schools, the five Samitya sub-schools do not assert the person's emptiness of being substantially existent in the sense of being self-sufficient, is subtle selflessness, because they consider that the substantiality's existence or the self-sufficient person exists. So because they do exist, the self-sufficient or substantially in existent self, by this Samitya sub-schools of the Great Exposition Schools, the Vaivashika. So therefore, they do not exist. They do not accept the lack of, substantial self, or the lack of, self-sufficient person or the self. It's rejected by this one sub-school of Vaivashika. So here normally when we speak about the self and our assertion of the self is something that exists independently, independent of psychophysical aggregates. In other words, apart from one's psychophysical aggregates. And so, however, according to this great, great exposition schools, they reject such a self that is independent of psychophysical aggregates and a self that is permanent, independent, and solitary. Self is rejected. So what it really says here is, no, we should not consider this, when we speak about the selflessness, we should not, according to this philosophical tenets, their, selflessness is mere lack of permanent, solitary, and independent. They do not assert the selflessness is substantially lack of substantial existence, because there's one sub-school that we mentioned earlier, the Samitya, asserts the person being substantially existent. So then it says, the proponent of the great exposition do not assert a presentation of the cross and subtle selflessness of phenomena, because they hold that all established based, such as mind, body, and so on, have a self of phenomena. That is, they truly exist and have a exist and have a difference of entity of subject and an object. So here we talked about the path. Now we are arrived on the chapter of object abandoned by the path. So what is meant by object abandoned by the path is, having cultivated this particular path, what we are abandoning, what is the abandonment of that is being abandoned by the cultivation of this particular path. So then it says there are the object abandoned by the path. There are two types of ignorance to be abandoned through the path: afflictive ignorance and then non-afflictive ignorance. So the first afflictive ignorance mainly prevents the attainment of liberations. So here again, in this particular philosophical tenets, the great exposition schools, when it comes to the division of the ignorance, they divided ignorance into two. One is afflictive and one is non-afflictive. So afflictive here refers to the ignorance that give rise to negative thoughts and emotions such as anger, hatred, and so on.
Yeah.
So then it says the illustration of the effect of ignorance, our consciousness conceiving a self, a person, and the three poisons, desire, hatred, ignorance, which arises on the account of this conception, as well as their seeds. So here, why this is called afflictive ignorance, such as the desire, hatred, and ignorance. Why these are called afflictive? Because at the moment those negative thoughts and emotions that arises within one's mind, it actually destroys the peace of one's mind. It actually afflicts within. It causes a discomfort mentally and eventually as well physically. So therefore it is called afflictive. And so now how can we really overcome this negative afflictive emotions? Particularly of this angers, when one knows that one is going through this problem of anger, then the antidote towards this anger is meditation on compassion or love or the bodhicitta. And you will experience yourself at the moment that you have this negative thought, such as anger arises, and when you try to, you know, putting an effort to cultivate love and compassion such as bodhicitta, you will see the power or the potency of the negative thoughts, such as anger that arises within you, is actually decreasing. So this requires a practice, you know, for once. It is good if we are able to adapt this as a, you know, our day to day practice. So, meditation on compassion and the bodhicitta will actually, you know, prevent and overcome those negative thoughts such as anger and hatred. But however, this will not cut the roots of those negative thoughts and emotions. When you are, let's take example, and you know, one will able to, you know, experience by one's own experience, one will able to see that. When you are in the process of meditation on compassion and love and bodhicitta, at that particular moment, you will not have those anger and hatred or negative thoughts and emotion inside you. However, when you are out of this session, when you're out of this meditation session, you're not actually engaging in meditation on compassion and so on, you will have the negative thoughts and emotions are still there. Because the propensity, the seeds of negative thoughts and emotions are there. So what is the ultimate antidote for overcome these negative thoughts and emotions is the understanding of selflessness. The understanding of selflessness, the wisdom that understands selflessness, will cut the roots or cut the seed of negative thoughts and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So here, when we speak about those meditation of compassion and love and bodhicitta will not cut the root of one's afflictions, one should not neglect the practice of compassion, love, and meditation of love, compassion, and bodhicitta. Because this practice of love and compassion and meditation on bodhicitta will become a contributory factor or become the favorable condition for giving rise to wisdom realizing emptiness, wisdom realizing selflessness. So therefore, what we call the importance of the practice of union, the unification, the practice of integration of method and wisdom. So method here refers to the compassion, love, bodhicitta, and so forth. And then the wisdom that here refers to the wisdom, understanding, selflessness. So this need to be integrated to overcome one's negative thoughts and emotions. So it is therefore you find in the Shantideva's guide to the Bodhisattva's way of life, where he stated that all the practice, the teachings on the practice of generosity, morality, patience, perseverance, and concentrations are taught for reinforcing the wisdom understanding emptiness, wisdom realizing selflessness. So therefore, all of those method aspects of the path, the practice of the method aspects of the path, will become a reinforcement of the cultivation of wisdom realizing selflessness or emptiness. So here when we contemplate on that things does not exist intrinsically, independently, by way of its own side, by virtue of its own side, on a very subtle level, what is happening is it is actually decreasing. It actually, become a contributory factor for decreasing one's own negative thoughts and emotions. Because most of our thoughts, negative thoughts and emotion arises within us is by believing, having a strong belief within us, the intrinsic existence of self and phenomena, and the independent self of phenomena. So that give rise to all kind of negative thoughts and emotions.
Ni
So then here in the next paragraph it explains about what is the divisions of two ignorances, non-afflictive ignorance and an afflictive ignorance. It says we talked about earlier that illustration of afflictive ignorance are the consciousness conceiving a self of a person and the three poisons, desire, hatred, and ignorance, which arises on account of these conceptions as well as their seeds. And the non-afflictive ignorance are mainly prevents the attainment of all knowings, all knowingness, it says. Illustration of non-afflictive ignorance are the four causes of non-knowingness, such as the non-afflictive obscurations, that is, the ignorance of the profound and subtle quality of a Buddha. So in the other Buddhist schools of thought, where they accept two obscurations, what they call obscuration to liberation and obscuration to omniscience. However, in this particular school, the Great Exposition School, they do not accept obscuration to omniscience, but they do accept there's a non-afflictive ignorance. So here, when we speak about this, four kinds of, you know, cause of non-knowingness, one of the, you know, it is a non-afflictive ignorance. Non-knowingness is not understanding the cause and effect, not understanding the karma. For instance, in Buddhism, we always find there are a strong emphasis on the law of cause and effect, and understanding of law of cause and effect. So it's actually, you know, functioning, the law and causes taking place, the functions of law and cause, law of cause and effect is functioning within us, but we are unable to understand that. For instance, we all have a different physical conditions, physical appearance, material status, and so forth, are all coming into being from one's own accumulation of past karma. However, we are unable to understand what kind of karma that causes us to be in this condition. So this kind of not knowing is said to be one of the non-afflictive obscurations asserted by this great exposition school. So we also find in the Guide to the Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, where he stated that the precise understanding of law of cause and effect is only when one gains the omniscient mind. With the lack of this omniscient mind, we will not be able to have a complete understanding or complete ascertainment of law of cause and effect. So therefore it is called as non-afflictive obscuration, that is the ignorance of the profound and subtle qualities of the Buddha in this particular, you know, asserted by this great exposition school. So then it says, with respect to the obscurations, aside from the obscuration to the liberation and the non-afflictive ignorance that propounds to the great exposition, do not accept the designation obscuration to omniscience. So then the next chapter, it reads the nature of the path. With respect to the path of the three vehicles, hearers or the particular, hearers and solitary realizers and bodhisattva, they assert a presentation of the five paths: the path of accumulation, the path of preparation, path of seeing, the path of meditation, and the path of no more learning. However, they do not accept the exalted wisdom of the 10 bodhisattvas crowns. They assert the generation of the 16 movement occurs no other way than serially, one step at a time, like a goat walking over a bridge. So then two paths are not necessarily consciousness, because the proponents of the great exposition maintain that the five uncontaminated mental and physical aggregates are true paths. True paths. Yeah. So then there are, as we spoke earlier about the different kinds of path, and each of those paths, such as path of accumulation, path of preparation, path of seeing, path of meditation and normal learnings and so forth, and different paths are given based on the different functions of those paths. So what is meant by the path of accumulations? The path of accumulation is the individual who is engaging in the practice of accumulation of merits, such as the method aspects, mostly focusing on the practice of the method aspects, such as meditation on compassion, love, bodhicitta, and so on. So then the next path, after the path of accumulations, then path of preparations. The path of preparation is called preparation, because when you have achieved the level of path of accumulations, and when the path of accumulations develops further and advances, then this will transcend the individual to the path of preparations. Why it is called the next path is called path of preparation is you're on the path that you are preparing to perceive emptiness. So then the next is, the third part is what we call the path of seeing. Why this is called the path of seeing, the reason why it is called the path of seeing is because when you advance from the path of preparation, then you reach at the point where you can perceive the emptiness, you know, directly. So you are actually able to perceive directly emptiness at the moment that you have arrived on the path of seeing. So that, therefore, it is called path of seeing. So you are seeing the emptiness directly at that moment. So then as you advance your practice on meditation or path of seeing, then you will transcend yourself to the path of meditations. And then when you are perfected the path of meditations, then this will allow oneself to the path of normal learning, which is the path of you have completed the 10 bhumis, or what we call the 10 grounds, that way you have arrived at the stage of enlightenment, in other words, the stage of Buddhahood. So then within the path of meditations, there are divisions and the different functions pertaining to different abandonments, the different obscurations or the different mental afflictions. And the most subtle, most mental affliction will be abandoned at the end of the path of meditations. And then this will transcend the individual, the practitioner, to the path of normal learning, which is the state of Buddhahood. So today we will stop here. And then we will resume our teachings on this particular text. And then, we will have a few questions. And the question doesn't necessarily need to, you know, relating to this particular practice, but also your day-to-day practice. Of course, it's Dharma practice. You can ask the questions.
How does a goat walk across a bridge? Do they walk across a bridge slowly?
Then the right, Sambakan Kumbakiwana, Yoba. Right, Sambakan Kumbakan is Kigris. Right, Sambakan Kumbakan is Kigris. I don't know. So, this example of, you know, the goats, you know, walking on the bridge. It's not like a monkey that who actually jumps from one branch to another branch. Rather, it is step by step. That's what it means by, you know, there's a gradual way of approaching the path.
Almost like it's afraid? Like the goat is afraid that the bridge might fall or something?
Ko kalejian gumbagyam drogwa di gradi ni ko korakwa pe gumbag samagwa drogwa shebre gharesa.
It's an example that is set for, you know, the path. When you are, you know, stepping on the path of enlightenment, it is a gradual manner. It is, we cannot, you know, skipping one, you know, jumping from one way to another. It's just an example that is set up, because when the goat walks on the bridge, they walk on the bridge, you know, cautiously, step by step, not jumping here and there.
Are there, you know, after setting all these steps and so on and so forth, are there people that we are actually known to be reaching the state of Buddhahood? Do people just, when they become Buddhas, do they just start doing something different? Do we know of people who are becoming Buddhas?
Do we know people who are becoming Buddhas? Okay. So here, when we speak about the, you know, state of enlightenment, we're speaking about, you know, for overcoming entire negative thoughts and emotions. So it is not that easy to really, for us as ordinary beings, to understand such and such person is on the verge of enlightenment, or in the close to enlightenment and so on. So we'll not be able to really understand that. That in order for one to have such understanding, we need to have a sufficient, what we call the ample accumulation of merits and virtue, so that we will be able to see someone who is nearing enlightenment.
You mentioned in order to overcome negative and afflictive emotions, it's necessary to get to the root cause, which is, I think I understood it right, which is the clinging to the idea of a permanent self. What do you suggest a person practice in order to make the non-permanence of oneself a reality?
So this should be begin from, you know, contemplation and then reflection on the four truths that we talked earlier. would really give you, you know, the precise understanding of how one can really, you know, counteract the actual root cause of one's affliction, or in other words, some sufferings. So with this, we'll first, for that, we need to understand the situation of cyclic existence. In other words, the actual mode of existence of samsara, or the cyclic existence. And when you come to understand this, the actual mode of existence of samsara, then this will lead yourself to disenchantment, pertaining to samsara, that what we call renunciations, or that it's renunciations. When you have this, then this will lead yourself to having a genuine desire or the aspiration to find the true cause, the root cause of samsaric existence, the root cause of samsara or samsaric beings, or in other suffering beings. And then when you further, you know, then this will further yourself to the knowledge of of what we call is what are the causes and conditions that really give rise to sufferings. Is there a way that we can really reverse this suffering, this process of sufferings? So this is all, you know, all, you know, by the range or the process, the long process of mental exercise or thinking, because of contemplations. Because when we speak about overcoming one's negative thoughts and emotions, negative thoughts and emotions cannot be overcome by relying upon the external means. Rather, this needs to be overcome by appropriate contemplations and meditations. You have questions?
Oh, okay. What? I was just wondering, like, once you are in the middle of really being angry and you can identify it and you start trying to like break down the situation and see all of the contributing factors, everything that's going into it, but you can't quite stop to do it. Like, you know you're supposed to, you know that you're angry, you know you're trying, but you just can't do it. Like, it's not working. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm.
This is a Kondro Shivu Sabi Kavliya, Kondro Sadevi Kavliya, that did it. Kondro de Ka Matho Shita Kanda, Kondro Rangal, Kondro Yipa Kanda, Kondro Liya Tode Gindash, Suzuki Ka Matho Shungu Arvas. That did Kavli Kandis Chivu Gindas, Kondro Kaya, Kanda Kondro Kaya Kandis Chivu Gindas. Sorry. Kondro Kaya, Kondro
Kaya, Kondro Kaya, Kondro Kaya,
So first of all, you know, prior to this generation of anger, one need to always look at the anger as one of the negative thoughts that destroys one's peace of mind, that actually becomes you know, a hindrance for one's own and a cultivation of calm mind and so forth. You should always on the, you know, be vigilant about this, because what happened with us is we become you know, careless about. We don't really care about this anger when it's, you know, we take it for granted. And then that is the problem that we have all the time. So, so when you are able to, you know, find a fault in this negative, I mean, anger as something that is negative thoughts, that you are not supposed to be generated. And if you are able to contemplating on that, even when the anger is not within you, And this will really, you know, become a country, well, this will really become a prevention of you know, generation of anger in the future as well. But it is not easy at all, because we are habituated with that kind of thought or from the beginningless time. So what Rinpoche suggested here is, for us as a practitioner, when you know that anger is within you, when anger is taking, you know, overpowering you, then try to take a deep breath and, you know, focus your mind on breathing exercise. Will really calm your mind, because this will, you know, take the attention from the anger. So we'll not really become as single-pointedly focusing on the object with whom that you are, with whom that you are generating anger and so on. It will take the attention from that. Although the anger is not completely gone, but you are able to, at least, you know, the intensity of the anger can be reduced. So this is how we practice.
Okay.
Does the 16 moments, I will read the next page, do they correlate with the 16 aspects of the Four Noble Truths? And then the only other question I have is that there are different lists of the 16 moments, or not the moments, but the 16 aspects. There's different lists from the interpretation, and I was really curious what, maybe that might be a question for next week, but the deliverance, what deliverance actually means, and truly deliverance and deliverance. But my main question is, does the 16 moments correlate with the 16 aspects in conjunction with Four Noble Truths?
Eddie, good. 대지미다서 주도 대나리아 아니 그 규르마다 마다 케바 마다 지니 뎁 마다 마다 나는데 밍 마다 마다 되는 도스로 대지 아니 단 슈마니 무제 있다지 대지미다서 주도들 레레 지 직송 도배나 야원 서레스 슈마니 So Trimuche will go through this next teachings, this part, because when the 16 attributes of what we call, it is sometimes it's called 16 aspects of the Four Noble Truths, and then also it's all, sometimes it's called 16 attributes of the Four Noble Truths and so forth, but there's a different way of, you know, interpretations, of course, but interpretation that we find in a different philosophical tenets as well. So we will go through that later next time. Yeah. Okay. The dedication.
Brown perfume and lamp flowers, your four cousins, the sun and the moon, season is with you in the hall of dust, and the all you can enjoy the eternal land. In the limelight, may I never be parted from the great masters, and may I enjoy the splendor of the dawn. Affect your own vision of the past, stages, and the next of the gates, the end of the yard. Even the good of the Mandala Kaya, I lay. I guess we'll just do the final flowers first. From my collection of insight, the merit of access, space, and next to working on the effort of the practice of the Lord, whereas at the great length of time, in one becomes the chief leading Buddha for those who suffer from ignorance of the mind. Of the wisdom I, even if I am not religious, but I say, may I always be governed with balance, bliss, and passion for all lives, and all great wonder truth, may I discover the best and complete great paths of the teachings, and may teaching all points of the path, just as I have seen them, thus lifting the darkness from minds of all others who still continue, through the force of compassion is having incentive, and I have all Buddhists or Buddhists to do for one beyond. For the art of the young whole generation was worth supreme to a white God, that declined and not spread. If compelled by a powerful force of integrity, may I expose the veil of that treasury of judgment beings according to the name. In the merit of the glorious good acts of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and the heat my work on the long run, may the deeds of the Buddhas for a long time nourish and bring the wondrous peace to those who could be free. As for all people not in hangings and not human, who prevent bad actions and connect circumstances conducted for the ignorant practice and those who are full of path, may they never be parted for all the lifetimes from the purest path which is the most great. When someone is familiar and accepted in accordance with the ten points of the Dhyana, may they always be assisted by the mind and the following. May the illusion of good fortune spread out, reaching all. May the Venerable Guru remain immovable, may his virtues and light activities spread in ten directions, and may the light of Lozanka doctrine dispel the darkness of being and true of all the remainder of heaven. In Vedic land, through land, surrounded by snow mountains, you are the source of all benefit and bliss. Avalokiteshvara, claim the capsule, please stay until the samsara ends. Just as the Honorable Manjushri and Sanatavadra have dedicated all virtue, following these excellent examples, I completely dedicate all these merits. Since all the beginnings and the three times have already been the practice of dedication, I completely dedicate all the roots of virtue in order to grab the